Greetings, beautiful ones. Welcome to the Snails with No Shells podcast. I am Ms. BJ Martin. It is so nice to meet you. In this community, we are all snails with no shells. This is a safe space for one to bear all and feel free. We will talk about any and everything. There is no judgment on this podcast. Individuals and aliens from all walks of life and planets, please join us. See you soon. Greetings, beautiful ones. I am Ms. BJ Martin, and this is Snails with No Shells. And now I would like to introduce the one and only and amazing Dr. Daryl L. Jones.
Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Oh, I love that. You always say that. Hey, everybody.
I know. And I have some friends from up north, and they just think I talk so country. And I say, you know, I never thought I'd talk country until I'm around people from other places.
I love the energy. Hey, everybody. I say, all right now. Well, greetings to you, beautiful one. I hope all is well.
All is well. Awesome. I feel good. And, you know, it's just really a great day to be able to enjoy life.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So, Dr. Daryl. So this is what I've been asking everybody lately. Where are you from?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. Some know it as the ATL. Most of us call it now the A. And yes, before you ask, I am a graded baby. I'm a graded baby.
Grady baby. All right, all right, all right, you guys. You heard it loud and proud. Dr. Daryl Jones is a Grady baby.
That's right.
All right, I'm about to keep track of this because I'm asking everybody from Atlanta. Are they Grady? Are they Grady babies? And so far, everybody has been. So we'll see how it goes. We'll continue to keep the consensus. Okay. Daryl, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, when I think about my life now, I feel as though I have a wonderful life. Is it the life that I would have wrote for myself? Possibly not, but the life that I have made me who I am, and I'm so appreciative of it. I'm the son of Louise and David. I have a sister. Also, I'm the oldest of the two of us. I'm a husband, a father, and to five little kids, I'm called G-Pop. So I had to throw that in there also. What else? I'm the pastor of a wonderful church, Champions for Christ Christian Church. Mm-hmm. I'm the owner of quite a few things, Be Better on Purpose. I'm the owner of the Passion for Purpose Up Close and Personal Podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm a book author in the process of writing my fifth book. I have four already. Marching Toward Your Purpose, Running Toward Your Purpose, Driving Toward Your Purpose. And the latest, most recent book I have is How Do I Get From Here to There? So I do a lot of stuff. I'm an adjunct professor at Ohio Christian University, where I teach undergraduate and graduate level courses of religion. So that's about it to start off with.
And oh, my. Oh, wow. So that's a lot. So you're a pastor / entrepreneur.
Yeah.
/ G-Paul.
Husband, brother, uncle, nephew, cousin, them.
Right. And you're probably an Uber or Lyft driver. I know.
I had a stint driving Uber for a while. I just wanted to see what the experience was like. I also coached back in the day. I used to be an educator for some years. I coached middle school, and I coached rec league, sports and everything. So coaching is in my blood. I'm a huge Atlanta Falcons, Georgia Bulldog fan, and a proud graduate of Morris Brown College.
All right, now.
Combination of Theological Center and Liberty University. So, all that stuff, you know, worked in banking, been a part of almost every get rich quick money scheme you could probably think of. but in the past, I've done quite a bit, you know, because I'd say I grew up from what, like, some people like to say humble beginnings, but I call it, I just call it humble beginnings because we didn't have a whole lot growing up. But one thing I can say, we had a lot of community and we had a lot of love. And that is what made me want to be able to go out and strive for the things that I have, that I go after now. And it just made me a people person because being from Atlanta, I grew up in a lot of different neighborhoods because we moved a lot growing up. I went to 5 different elementary schools. And, you know, it seemed like almost every time I would make a friend, or make some friends, we would end up moving. So I started getting to the point, I said, I'm tired of making friends only to have to move. So I started kind of going into a shell for a while. And, you know, I used to get mad because every time I would make friends, we would have to move and then it would be sad. So then I understand now why that happened, because back then, and even now, there are a lot of people, especially when you live in a city like Atlanta, you have to move a lot if you don't own your property. And when you're renting, you know, the rent specials are very enticing. They'll get you in with 6 months free rent, and then by the time the rent kick in, hey, somebody else have a special. Let's move again. You know, and just have to move. So I kind of understand the philosophy of things like that, because when you grow up and you don't have a lot of money, you have to do what's best for your family, and you have to find the best place to live at the least cost. So, you know, I think my mom did an excellent job, especially considering she did most of it. Well, I ain't gonna say she did most of it by herself, because it was a village. I had my aunts, my grandma, and my uncle, so she did a lot with the help she had, but she did a lot as a single parent, because my dad wasn't around. He wasn't active in our life at all.
Wow, that, you know what? And that's a trip, because all these things that you've done and achieved, all these accomplishments, and this is another fine example of a great man that has, you know, was brought up in a single parent home. Wow.
Single parent home, mom with the 11th grade education.
That's amazing. Yeah.
When I think about the stuff that she did with her experience, you know, my mom always worked hard at whatever she did, and she's a good learner. So she's able to learn almost anything. But when I think about what she's able to do, and then when I think about me and some of my family members now, and some friends who have a spouse, both working, making good money, and still chasing the dollar, and still finding hard to try to save and do things, I said she did a lot with what she had. And it made me realize that I have to better manage stuff, because it's not about how much money you make, it's how you manage everything you have. People, possessions, all the stuff, how you manage stuff.
Okay.
And that's what's important to me now, learning how to manage friendships, relationships, time. We have to manage, because we don't own any of it. It all belongs to God. So I figured learn how to manage.
Okay. So I was going to ask you, so who inspires you to do all these wonderful things?
I'll start with my family first. My family, and I'll start with the immediate family, with my wife and kids, and go all the way out to my extended family. My grandmother has a huge influence over my life. My grandmom, her birthday is the day after mine, so we always had a very special connection. She always was very active in my life, still very active in my life. She's 91 years old now, and still have all her faculties, sharp as a tack, and she's one of my major influences. My granddad influenced me. He was a major influence. My uncle was a huge influence for me, because my uncle Mills, and I didn't have a brother growing up, so he was like my brother. He was only 5 years apart. He was the one who made sure that I was gonna be cool. He was the one who made sure I wasn't gonna be no chump or no little weakling or nothing like that. He taught me a lot of stuff. He taught me how to attract girls. He taught me what to say to girls and stuff like that at their age. And when I look back on, he taught me a lot of stuff that wasn't right. but you know,
but right.
He taught me confidence and how to approach girls, and that's something that kept growing up with. And he just really, and to this day, he's still a major influence on my life of the things that I do.
Okay, that's important. Now, how you approach women, that is.
He was really gifted for us attracting women, and I wanted to be like him. I tried to walk like him and talk like him, and he was getting women, but I was a nerd, so I wasn't getting them what he was getting. So, you know, I was one of those late bloomers, I guess. You know, it was just really interesting growing up in Atlanta. We stayed in a place called Carver Homes. Back then, they were called projects. We don't have projects anymore, but they were called projects back then. And you know, I didn't realize I was poor until I was about 18 years old. Because we all had the same thing in our community. We all did a lot of the same things, wore similar type clothing. So it was when I got to Morris Brown College when I realized people my age was driving cars like Mercedes and BMWs and Mustangs and all this stuff. And I was still on public transportation at the time. I said, oh man, you know, these people come from families that got some money. You know, I want to have money like some of these people's family. And that's what really got me excited about wanting to really be successful at whatever it was I felt like my purpose in life was.
Okay, so Morris Brown College definitely played a role in your thinking.
Yes, a huge role. And it was the people that I met there who are still lifelong friends, who I will be seeing again very soon, in about 2 weeks, as we celebrate our homecoming. I have people from all over the country that will be coming in town, and I'm just so excited about those people who I've known now for several years.
Okay, that's amazing. Did you pledge? Did they have any fraternities and all that on campus when you was at Morgan?
They did, and what was interesting is a lot of the social fraternities, say we have what's called social fraternities and professional fraternities, and a lot of people don't really pay attention to the difference. But your social fraternity, especially your Black African-American fraternities, are your Omegas, Kappas, Sigmas, and Alphas. Those were the social fraternities that everybody knew about. And I had interest in pledging one of those, but a lot of them were in and out of probation. And by the time what I consider my wonder, the pledge had passed, I was on the road to try to graduate then, so I didn't think about it. But there are professional fraternities, and I ended up pledging a professional music fraternity, which is Phi Mu Alpha Sinfonia, Kappa Beta Chapter. And that's a professional music fraternity that, if you know most successful musicians, and when I say musicians, I'm not talking about necessarily rappers and R&B, I'm talking about musicians who, like Quincy Jones, belongs to our fraternity, Louis Armstrong, Wynton Marcel. I'm talking serious musicians. And some local musicians like Ethel Robinson belongs to my fraternity. Fred Brown. It's just so many that you probably know that you didn't know belong to the fraternity. And what's so interesting, you either had to be in a band, dance, or chorus, or something like that as a musician on a college campus to pledge it. And on Black campuses, we pledge that professional music fraternity like they pledge social fraternities. But on, say, our fraternity is predominantly white fraternity for the most part. They're on all the major campuses, UGA, USC, all the major schools have our chapter. A lot of the African American schools start getting them later in the 90s, so now they're everywhere. And it's so interesting about the fraternity because we are a very close knit group of musicians. And if you ever go out and see musicians playing in local clubs, at places like Wolf Creek and things like that, there's a very good chance most of them probably belong to our fraternity.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I had never heard of that fraternity. Yeah.
It's Phi Mu Alpha, and if you look at it, you'll see so many people who belong to the fraternity. And what's so interesting about it is I'm not half the talent musically as most of the people in our fraternity, but you have to belong to a musical organization. But most of them actually majored in music, and some of them are so skilled and gifted, it just blows my mind. Some of those people who belong to the fraternity, I said, y'all must have just felt sorry for me because, maybe y'all bought me in because y'all saw something that I didn't see, because I was a good musician, but not near as talented as some of these guys who belong to our fraternity.
Well, and what instrument did you play?
I played trumpet, French horn, mellophone, and I could play a little baritone. So I could play almost anything brass with the exception of maybe the trombone.
Oh, okay. All right, all right.
And I still I still have a trumpet here that I play every now and then. I don't play it publicly for nobody. I won't play publicly ever again. I have a keyboard here that I try to tinker with, and I have a guitar that I tinker with. And those are just for my own enjoyment. I wouldn't play them out. Well, it all depends. I ain't gonna say I would never play it out in public, but I don't plan on playing them out in public.
Okay, so what was your major? You said they majored in music and theater.
Yeah, most of them. I was a business major. I majored in business administration. And when I first started school, I was gonna be a music major because I thought I wanted to be a band director. But when I saw all the stuff they had, I didn't know all the stuff was involved. Like, you have to know how to, you have to take music theory, you have to take music composition, you have to know how to compose, you have to write music, you have to learn how to play woodwinds. And I said, you know, I'm not that talented. I'm not ready to put all that energy into all that stuff because I want to make a whole lot of money. And I realized then that music was a hobby for me. And I said, I wanted to make a job, have a job that I could get a lot of money out of. So I majored in business. And business was a skill set that I had naturally and didn't know it. But what happened, I grew up, again, like I said, in Carver homes and in some of the lower income communities of Atlanta. So I learned, I don't like the word hustle for the most part, but I learned street business. So I said it that way. I learned how to market. I learned accounting. I'm excellent in taxation. There's nothing I can't do when it comes to taxes, be it corporate taxes, withholding sales, nonprofit taxes. God bless me with a skill set of taxation.
Oh, okay. So, wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and now, because of that, I can start a business for anybody. Like, I've helped people start business. Now, I'm not the one that's going to run the business. And I'm not the one that's going to probably want to work for the business. But I can start it for you, and I can make sure that you run it properly if you're running it. Because I feel like my time is valuable. I'm the one to start the business. It's up to you to run it, and I just get a small percentage of the profit. So that's the thing I've always liked there, starting businesses. And, you know, for the most part, a lot of people have great business ideas, and they know how to do stuff, but they don't know all the legal work that you have to do for it's going to the county, going to the city and state, and making sure you have all this stuff taken care of and everything. That's my specialty. But I don't do that for the most part now because I'm holding up my quote fingers, my quotations. I'm supposedly retired.
Okay.
So the only thing I'm supposed to be doing is pastoring. Yeah, all that I'm supposed to be doing is pastoring and writing books, but I still do a whole lot of things. And my new love is I'm a podcaster. I have a Be Better On Purpose podcast on YouTube, and I love going out there to Instagram and Facebook and posting motivating videos. And I love interviewing some of the people in particular who have been on my Passion for Purpose Up Close and Personal podcast. And you were one of my guests who was just such a joy. As a matter of fact, that's how we reconnected. Because of that, that's how we reconnected, through the podcast.
Yep, that's the truth. And I had an amazing time on your podcast. Now you're on mine.
and you know, and the beauty of that is, that's what this whole podcasting has done for me. It's allowed me the opportunity to talk to people I hadn't talked to in a long time. And I've actually met some new people who've been on my podcast that I didn't know because of Instagram and Facebook. People said they want to be on it, so I've allowed them to be on it. I've had people actually come and ask, can they be on it? And I saw something that you did that I'm going to borrow from you, where you said that DM you if you want to be on your podcast because everybody has a story to tell. And I thought that was wonderful because people are asking me, and I don't want people to just think I don't want them on there. So if you want to be on my podcast, I just let them DM me like you did, which I thought was a great way to allow people to share their stories about who they are.
Absolutely. And thank you. Thank you so much.
I thought that was wonderful. And I said, I was going to tell you that. I didn't think I was going to tell you that on the podcast, but I want everybody to know that I got this from Miss BJ Mari.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. People will do things and they'll do, and you don't even know it. They won't say nothing to you.
I thought that was a great idea. And it is so true. Everybody has a story to tell, and most people just need the platform and encouragement to step forward in faith and trust that their story is a purpose-driven story that somebody's going to benefit from in life. So I just think it's great.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, because everybody has a different story. And that person A might not resonate with you, but person B might resonate with you so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it could change your life. It could change your life, you know?
You know, it was interesting because I think about how now that we both doing the podcast and how we got reconnected to it, it allowed us opportunity to see that because of us knowing each other and how we reconnected, there's a purpose for all of our lives. And a lot of times you can be dormant with a person for years, and not even, you didn't even have to be the best of friends initially, but years later, if you treat that person right, you can come back together, and you never know how that relationship could blossom and be the best relationship possible.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That is so true. Oh, I love it. I love the energy. I love this.
Thank you.
I do too. And quickly back to your college days. I didn't get a chance to ask you, what fraternity did you actually want to pledge initially?
I plead the fifth. I plead the fifth. And the reason I say I plead the fifth, because I know a lot of people will hear this podcast, and that's something that I've always just held close. I don't think, not immediate family probably know, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They might not, but they might know. But I've never really pretty much discussed it publicly,
okay,
because since I didn't pledge it, and they hadn't invited me to pledge their grad chapter yet, and probably because they didn't know I wanted to pledge. But,
right.
So, there are four of them, the Omegas, the Kappas, the Sigmas, and the Alphas. There are four of them out there. So if you know who I am and you know I didn't pledge you because I didn't pledge, and if you think I need to be a part of their fraternity, they will reach out to me. But it's just interesting because all of them are great fraternities. I have friends who belong to all of them, and I think they're great fraternities. And the beauty about my fraternity, which is a professional fraternity, I could join either one of them, and it's not a conflict because we're a professional fraternity. And you could be a part of a professional and a social fraternity at the same time, because all fraternities have people who belong to all four of those others.
Okay. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, I tried to get him to tell us, and he pleads the fifth. So I'm gonna move on.
Hey,
I'm about to find out. I'm about to find out off air. I'm about to.
I'll definitely tell you off air. I'll tell you off air. And if you know my personality, you probably have. Well, no,
I already know.
My personality goes across all of them. My personality fits with all of them.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, I want to ask you about being a pastor. Let's go into that.
Okay.
So you're a pastor. How long have you been pastoring?
I've been pastoring now since 2005. So that'd be 16 years that I've actually been pastoring. I got called into ministry in 1991. I was called to ministry. And we was at the same church that I got called. So you and I attended the same church that I got called into ministry. I don't think you were there when I got called into ministry. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell the story. So everybody knows the story anyway. I got called into ministry at Mount Nebo Baptist Church and Life Center over in the Thomasville community of Atlanta. And I got called into ministry up under the Reverend A.J. McMichael. When God first called me into ministry, it was an interesting and unique time of my life. I was serving as choir president of the GNRE choir at the time, and I was working in banking then. I had graduated a couple of years earlier from Morris Brown. I was working in banking on what I thought was a fast track to a whole lot of money. The track was pretty good, and I was making good money for that time, especially for my age. At that time, I was in my, in my early to mid-20s, and I was working at banking. I was loving that. And all of a sudden, I got to the point in life where I was just getting so frustrated. That job wasn't making me happy anymore. Even though it was a great job, the hours were great. I had the banker's hours. Even though I was working in bank operation, I worked in accounting. But the thing about it was just never satisfying me anymore. And I couldn't understand why I wasn't happy with what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I eventually found out was, it was God's way of stirring up the hunger in me for something more in life, which eventually was trying to find out what God wanted me to do with my life. So I started talking to Pastor McMichael, and I started letting him know about how it's been and what was going on. And through time, he was sharing with me that he felt like God was dealing with me about my life. And eventually, we got to the point of him helping me understand this was God allowed me to realize that he wanted me to be used for public ministry and preaching. And the funny thing about that was, you know, when you're in the church, you know how to look good on Sunday mornings, you know how to look good on Wednesday night Bible study, and whatever organization you belong to, you know how to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. But inside of me, I knew that there were certain things that I was dealing with that wasn't just really right yet.
Okay.
So, you know, I think back on that time when I was getting ready to start in the ministry, that there were things that was going on in my life that on the surface looked great, but I was having personal battles inside. And when I say personal battles, that's church talk. I just need to work more on letting my walk and talk match each other. So that's what I'll say. So I had to actually learn how to start being more committed to living according to the faith that I was proclaiming. I had started studying my Bible more. I had started praying more. I had to really start knowing about what it means to actually try to share with people what I felt God was putting on my heart to share with them through messages. Because I had never preached before, and most people, when they get called into ministry, they had never preached before. So it's like, how do I do that? I had to learn how to write a sermon. I had to learn how to study the Bible and pull out key facts and peoples and places and things. It's just so much so. So what Pastor Micah did was, he had this thing he always strongly recommend. I was going to say recommend, but he strongly recommend that you attend seminary. In particular, the ITC, which is the Interdenominational Theological Center over in AU Center of Atlanta. So I registered, and how I knew it was meant to be, it was like August, and I was registering because I figured it was too late to start that first semester, so I'll go start for January. But because of Pastor McMichael and the people he knew over at ITC, I was able to start almost immediately that fall. They pulled some type of string that got me in the fall class. So now I'm in school, I'm working full time at the bank, and I have two small kids, the wife I was trying to take care of. And life was really challenging. Hmm. I was coaching Little League baseball at the same time. I was coaching my son's t-ball team, going to school. So I was just doing a whole lot. And being a young African-American male in Atlanta, in a real nice church, that was just certain things that I had to deal with. But I'm going to be a little more upfront. I wanted to play the role of a successful person in society. So I wanted to, it was important that I tried to look good. It was important that I tried to do things. And really, it was a lot of nothing that I was doing. And I was trying to be impressive to a point where that wasn't important. So that was more my coming to myself moment. What is really important that you're trying to do? Why are you trying to be successful? Do you want a lot of money? Do you want a lot of material stuff? Do you want a lot of stuff? Or do you want to try to make a difference in life? Or do you want to please God and your family? So once I came to grips with I wanted to please God and my family, that's when I was able to start getting rid of some of the stuff that was going on inside of me. Those doubters, I guess I would say, I would call them.
And that probably coming from humble beginnings, as you said, that might have had a big role to play in that as well. And then you said you were only in your 20s.
I still wanted to kind of enjoy the party life. And I still
wanted to enjoy the party life. Yeah.
And, you know, when you're around pretty women and parties and money and stuff, and, you know, you just do things because you're in your 20s. So it was like, right. I had to kind of start shifting, and the shifting wasn't as easy as some people think it is. You know, I struggled early in my 20s and 30s about things that 20 and 30 year olds struggle with. Exactly. Trying to hustle to make money, trying to be committed to your family, trying to be committed to your church and stuff. And it was a struggle. as a young person. And I didn't always make great decisions. I made some bad decisions, a lot of bad decisions. And that's the reason I'm so in love with my faith now, because many years later, I feel like I've grown, I've strengthened, and a lot of those same decisions I used to make, I don't make anymore. And either I outgrew them or I outgrew them because I don't do them. Mm-hmm. So, and the thing is, a lot of times people think as you get older, you just stop doing things. That's not necessarily true. The older you get, the better you get at doing it, hopefully. So, right. You know, when you get caught a couple of times when you're doing things you shouldn't have been doing, either you learn how to not do it or you get better at doing it so you won't get caught again.
Right.
And that's what happened to me as a man, trying to live right. And now I'm at a point, all those things that used to be important to me back then, it's not anymore. Now what's important is me living right in the eyesight of God, and still knowing that I'm never going to be perfect. So I know I still make mistakes, but at least my intentions are good. Whereas then my intentions weren't even good, and it was hard trying to prove to myself that I even had good intentions. So for those who are young and the faith, whatever your faith may be, mine just happen to be Christian, but for whatever faith you practice in, as a young person, you're going to have challenges and you're going to struggle with it, no matter how good you try to look on the outside. I was just some dressed up dust back then, you know, looked good with my nice suits and cufflinks and starched shirts and all that, but I was doing some stuff on the inside, like, you know, you need to do better, you know, you got to do right, you know, and again, working, trying to get a lot of money. You know, you do things for money. And when you get money, you try to do things with money that's not sometimes pleasing to God. So I had to learn how to reshift my focus.
Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. And thank you for that. And I'm sure somebody that's young, that's listening, probably needs to hear that. And probably some older people need to hear that as well.
Yeah.
That it's, and this, all, it's a struggle. Yeah.
And this being a young Christian and being a young preacher. So, you know, and now I understand why you have to really do due diligence when churches pick faith leaders. I would say faith practices pick faith leaders, because hopefully that person who's leading you have experienced some things that can help you so you don't make those same mistakes. And trust that the mistakes that person made, they've learned from it so they can grow and do better things in life, because we all do some stuff. I don't care. Even if there's some older people in ministry now, me included, there are some things that we would probably still do in life, not that we want to do them, but because of the fact that life presents things that we don't always make the best decision. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what it taught me is lighten up on myself and lighten up on others. Because I used to beat myself up when I used to make mistakes. And I used to beat others up when they made mistakes. Because I'm like, you know better. I know better. But, you know, what happened was it was part of our growth. And now, the only thing I can do now is just love everything and love all of everybody.
Okay.
So that's
sum it all up.
And it took some years to get here. It didn't happen overnight. But now I'm at a place in life where I probably live more days than I have remaining. So my thing now is to finish strong.
Gotcha.
And that's why I have be better on purpose. You have to intentionally try to be better. You can't be better by accident all the time. You know, try to be better, because there's so many forces trying to keep you from being better, because it's so much better for other people when you're not at your best. When they're trying to maneuver you and get you to do things they want. Now, for those who want to support you and love you and need the things that you have, those are the ones who want to get the best out of you. But right. Unfortunately, too many want the obstacle. Too many people are selfish, so they want to know what can you do for them, regardless of how you feel and what you have to do to do it.
Right, right. Wow. Well, thank you for being so transparent. I appreciate that. I'm sure we all appreciate that.
In the words of one of my favorite comedians, Bernie Mac, "I ain't scared of you." I don't use that language that he used to complete that sentence, but
right. Right. That's right. That's right. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's interesting because I really hope that what I'm sharing, more people who think they're in positions of power and honor and all this stuff, we all in them with some dressed up dust. And hopefully, you don't have to be all very personal and transparent to everybody, but share enough of your life and story so it can help somebody, so they'll know that you are human just like they are. We already know it anyway. But share some stuff that, you know, because a lot of stuff that I used to be ashamed of have blessed people. And a lot of stuff that I thought was problems that I would never say, things I would never tell people. When I did get opportunity to tell people, it not only helped them, it helped me to get that stuff out of me.
Yes.
You know, that was more funny than embarrassing. Why don't you laugh at yourself? So now I've learned to laugh at a lot of
yes.
I laughed at some stuff that, I laughed at some stuff, some sermons I preached. I'm like, man, what in the world did I think about this? You know, and I think I shared with you before in the past, I had to apologize to a lot of people who heard me preach earlier in life. Because when you're young in ministry, you preach based off of what you feel and what you think you know. But when you grow, you change and you develop and you realize that's where you were then. So not that I preached some bad stuff, but I thank God for growth. And I've grown past a lot of stuff that I thought was absolute to only find out now that it wasn't absolute.
Truth. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love people in all their mess and still love them because I realized somebody had loved me in my mess and somebody still had loved me in my mess.
Mm-hmm. And the good thing is the sermon, I'm sure that you preaching now are nothing like the ones you preached when you were in your 20s. You know what I mean?
You know, when you first started preaching, and it's so unfortunate too that this happened, but when you first started preaching, and I could say this in almost any walk of life, you don't want people to think that you don't know what you're doing. So you start out preaching the whole Bible. You want to take people and let them know that you know a lot of Bible and you know a lot of this and all that. And really, you ain't doing them just spewing out a lot of stuff because it's not something that you really that passionate about yet. Not saying that you won't get there, but a lot of stuff you preached back then, from my perspective, it was from the thought side of my life. It wasn't from the heart as much yet. Because time will get you to talk from your heart. You know, you talk from your mind, but time, trials, tribulations.
I was going to say experience.
You
hadn't experienced a lot yet.
Exactly. And what I was experiencing wasn't nobody's business at the time.
Right.
Not all of it. Some of it, but not all of it. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I wanted to ask you this as well. So being a pastor, how has the pandemic affected your church and you?
It has had an effect. And the one that I say stands out the most is I really miss hugging and greeting those that I worship with every Sunday. You know, we've been online now since then. And now that we've been in this pandemic for so long, like a lot of other churches, because we never owned our own place. We always leased buildings. I like leasing buildings because I don't think that we were financially strong enough to support owning yet. Especially long-term, because in a church, most giving in a church is voluntary. And I just didn't think that God believed for my ministry that he wanted us to be so in debt that we can minister to people through our financial giving. So I never wanted to have a mortgage that was more than we could pay and still do ministry. Because of our size and we weren't that big, I knew that the money that we bring in couldn't really minister properly and pay big mortgages. So to me, it was important to lease space so I could afford the lease. And if something came up, I could go back to the property owner and say, hey, we need to renegotiate this now because we are in a time now where we don't have as much money coming in. Can we lower this lease? If not, I'll leave and we're going to find some more space. So that's what we did with our ministry initially. So when the pandemic hit, now people are losing, the owners are losing the deal because those of us who are leasing ain't paying the lease anymore because we at home now doing Zoom. So you know, they're losing buildings and people who were leasing don't have a place to go to yet. So when it's over with, there will be people who have a lot of building space looking for people like us to come and lease their space so they can start getting some money on it so it won't get foreclosed on. So I think pandemic has done a great thing for the church from that perspective. It let us know what's important financially.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of things that the churches have done overall that might not have always been in the best interest of financial stewardship.
Okay.
Because it costs to take care of a top-notch music ministry. It costs to take care of a $1 million or $10 million building. It costs to hire staff members to do certain things. And now what this has done from that perspective is reminded us what the main thing is and how to keep the main thing, which is loving one another the way God wants us to love. Well, first of all, loving God with all our heart, mind, and soul, and loving each other as ourselves.
Okay. So,
when that, I think that's what it is. All these other things that we've done there, good, but to me, trying to force people to do things is not the way to do it, and try to bait and hook them by bringing them in with all this stuff ain't the right way either. You bring people together by being there for each other in love. And that goes across faith practices, that goes across gender, it goes across racial lines and economic lines.
All right. You heard it. All right. This has been a great conversation. Great, great.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you allowing me the opportunity. And it's amazing, out of all the people who I've known through the years, you're the first person who actually had me on to want to know what it was like from that perspective. And I'm pretty sure there are some who wanted to, but didn't know if I would actually answer. But you getting it all raw. And it's, you know, unfiltered, unedited, and unpolished. You know, and now I'm at a point, again, like Uncle Bruno say, I ain't scared of you.
That's right.
You know, because really, it's time for us to be real as people. Mm-hmm. Because you can't be real as a church until you become real as a person.
That's right.
And you can't be real, again, going back to, I say this, though I'm Christian, I respect everybody's faith practice, if you have one, because, you know, I said that I truly believe that, you know, my job is to love everybody, and yeah, we definitely have to do something with it, how we love each other, mm-hmm. and how we are required to love each other, no matter what faith you belong to, every faith practice is undergirded with love.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap this conversation up. We could go on for another 2 or 3 hours.
I know.
Talking.
And you know, it's so funny because when you connect with the right people, the conversations just flow and you just get to talk and everything. And, you know, I truly believe that this platform you have here is going to really help so many people. It's going to help them because it's going to let them realize that they are not alone. We all just trying to live this thing called life the best way we know how.
Yes, absolutely. I agree 100%. I agree. All right. Well, again, Dr. Daryl Jones, thank you for being a guest on my podcast. I am very thankful. And also, like you said, I was on your podcast as well.
Yes, and thank you for that.
Yes.
That's a great podcast we shared together. And every time it comes up in the rotation, I look at it and everything and just think about some of the wonderful things that we was able to communicate in that podcast. And it was just a great experience hearing some of the great things that you're doing and what you're doing now. And I just want to let you know that I'm supporting you. And when I say I support you, when I give my word on it, my word is what I mean. I am supporting you and I will continue to support you because what you're doing is a great thing, especially your work on mental health, mm-hmm. what you're doing with your music, what you're doing with your poetry. It's a great thing. And I'm just so excited to see when it comes out. And I'm still waiting on my autographed copy of my book, of your book that you have.
Okay,
which is
I got
a top seller on Amazon. I have the Kindle version of it, but I want an autographed paperback copy.
Yes, sir. I have it. I got it right here.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege to have you on my podcast. Okay. So is there one thing or, you know, that you would like to say? Just
Well, what I'd like to say to all those who are listening to Miss BJ Martin Snails Without Shells outstanding podcast is, just trust the process and know that we all are trying to make our lives better. And sometimes it don't look like it. And just because it don't look like it don't mean it's not happening. And just because you can't see it don't mean it's not there. Trust the process and trust what you know within you and let that process work itself out, because the process is just as important as the destination.
Awesome. All right,
DJ Martin.
Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen and aliens, thank you for tuning in to my podcast. Thank you for taking the time to listen. And just remember, just like the sun, you are necessary.